You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. We are driven by Continental as always, and this, Dave, this is our last show of 2017, which is kind of incredible to say. We've been doing this for years now. I mean, that's been years, right?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah,
That is nuts. If you want to be an intern, if you want to, like, help us out, hit us up.
Yeah.
From, you know, Dave was running the dials at the beginning, and now he's an integral 1-2 punch.
Wow. Yeah, boom.
Bam.
I emailed when I was in college, and now I'm here. Mm-hmm. And now I sit here in a dark room and talk about soccer with you twice a week.
Yes, that is the highlight.
It is the dream.
It's the dream. We hope that you have enjoyed our specials and our interviews so far this holiday season. Kellen Acosta, Dwayne De Rosario. I don't know why I flubbed that one so hard. Jack Harrison, Kellen Rowe. And on this show, Julian Gressel and Tim Melia both sat down with me, a couple weeks ago now. MLS Cup Week. Great conversations. Two guys that have had a little bit of an underdog route to their current spot, which is Rookie of the Year and Goalkeeper of the Year. And for Tim Melia, Best 11. We're going to start with Julian Gressel. Let's go to the interview now. We're spending the holidays in the green room here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. I'm Andrew Reby. I'm with Julian Gressel. Gresselmania, Atlanta United's AT&T Rookie of the Year here in 2017. Julian, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I'm sitting here and I'm wondering how a kid from Neustadt, Germany, got to Providence, got to Atlanta, got the MLS AT&T Rookie of the Year Award. Like, take me back, man. Take me back to childhood, through college decisions. How did all this happen? How did you become a quote-unquote expat here in America?
Man, that is a really long story. So I could go on for this for about an hour or so.
We don't have an hour. So give us like the Twitter version here, I guess.
Okay. I mean, it all started kind of back in the day where I, not get cut, but just not make the next level in my U15s team from the pretty good youth academy, where they kind of just cut me. And then I decided for myself, you know.
What happened there? Why didn't, like, from your perspective as a 15-year-old,
I just wasn't developing fast enough for them. You know, they were looking for the best players in the region, and I can say now that I wasn't that. You know, I was on the team within that club for a long time, but I wasn't as fast as my other guys. I wasn't, you know, as technical as the other guys. You know, it was just I took a little longer to develop as a player, and that's totally normal. You know, some guys are like that, and I'm always saying that not everybody has to be like Pulisic.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody can be like Pulisic, but...
Yeah, that's right. So then I kind of decided for myself, or made the decision that I have to just look out, you know, for my life. You know, what's going to be there without potentially no soccer? Not being able to make it in the pros and kind of just... then obviously school became a huge part for me. So I finished my high school there. Then in between that, actually came over here to the U.S., did a little exchange year where I didn't play much soccer, and then kind of just...
And that was in between high school and college?
That was actually in between 10th and 11th grade.
Gotcha. Where'd you spend that time?
Down in Florida, nice little small school. Had a great time. Was living like 2 minutes off the beach, so it was incredible.
All your friends back in Germany were like, what is this?
Yeah, no, it was...
Sunset pics on the beach, everybody has a pool...
That's right. No, it was great. And it just kind of gave me a different perspective, you know, kind of got away from home for the first time when I was 16 back then. So it kind of just made me more independent and kind of grew up during that time. And then I came back, finished high school, and then made the decision for myself to come over here in college, just because I kind of know the culture, kind of know the lifestyle, and I liked it. And so I saw that as an option. And then, I came to Providence, made the right decision in the end. To attend that college, they really wanted me as a soccer player, and I felt good with going there because the school is a good school, and obviously the soccer program was pretty decent as well. Yeah, so I made that decision and to come over here and kind of go both ways, you know, get the school degree and be prepared for life in case I'm not making it as a soccer pro anymore, you know. And I would have been the first one to say that after those 3.5 or 4 years in college, if I wasn't good enough to make it, I would have been the first one to say, all right, like I'm going to rely on my school now and going to find a job and play for fun. But thankfully, I became a pro and made that dream a reality.
What were you going to do? What's your degree?
Bachelor's degree in management with a minor in finance. So major was management, minor in finance. So obviously the business world. We have a family business back home, so I always kind of knew I wanted to go into the business world one day. But now obviously with this, we'll see. We'll see how my my job life will turn out after my career.
What's the family business? I'm always interested to hear.
It's a transporting company. So my great grandpa started it, and now my grandpa has kind of restructured it with all the industrialization and kind of changing in technology and all that. And now my mom's running it with him. So it's been within the family in a long time, and it'd be sad, obviously, not for anybody to continue that tradition.
So, Julian, after the soccer career, but you can't get up now, man. Rookie of the year, you had an amazing season, 24 starts for Atlanta, 5 goals, 9 assists, one of the best rookie seasons we've seen in a long time. I think back to, what was it now, January, being at the Combine at the StubHub Center. I was calling the games with our own David Goss, of course, here at Extra Time Radio fame as well. And Matt Doyle was there as well. We were watching these games and we're thinking, that's a man among boys down there. Julian Gressel is dominating these dudes, and it's hard because every team's just kind of like thrown together, mishmash. Nobody knows each other. How did you feel going to the Combine as far as your stock? And then at the Combine, what signals did you start getting? And then afterwards, were you confident, hey, I'm going to be a first-round pick?
Well, before the Combine, I was pretty confident because I had a good senior year. You know, I was kind of playing a little out of my position as a forward during my senior year because we had some injuries at Providence. But then I knew at the Combine, you know, if I just showed who I am, you know, trying to be myself out there, that I can be, one of the top guys there. And I think I prepared for multiple positions, but then ultimately I played most of it in center midfield. That's, to be honest, where I see myself long term as a player. I had a few good games. I felt good in the games, you know. I was, like I said, just trying to be myself. I think I did that, and then I signed a contract with MLS before the draft, so that kind of made me confident that...
That's a little bit of a weird thing, right? You don't even know where you're going, and yet you have a contract. That's definitely not the way it works in Germany.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it was so weird, especially for my family back home, because they don't know all the rules and kind of how it works. So it was hard for them to kind of wrap their head around it, but... I was just excited, you know, to kind of have a sense that, all right, there seems to be enough teams out there that like me and that I'll get picked somewhere, and then I just have to prove myself. That's kind of really what it all came down to.
When you went to Providence, and obviously you're there to get your degree, and you're thinking about, hey, if soccer doesn't work out, did you have that secondary thought that was, I think I'm a good player, I'm progressing, look, MLS is an option for me. Were you thinking MLS when you went to Providence? Was that in your mind, or was that just kind of a happy coincidence that you were then able to move on to?
It was in my head. I always told the coaches at Providence while they were recruiting me, or other coaches from other schools that were talking to me, that I want to be a pro if it's possible. You know, I want to do everything for it. I want to give it all I have those next 4 years at college to kind of achieve that dream. And if it then doesn't work out, then so be it. They knew coming into it, and I knew coming into it, I'll give it my best shot. They helped me a tremendous amount and kind of developed me, and obviously made me better to be able to make that jump then to the next level.
What did you know about MLS? Were you watching games in college? Were you like going up the road to Gillette to watch the Revs? How did you experience the league? What did you know about it?
Yeah, so, I mean, once I was in the U.S., I pretty quickly started to watch soccer and MLS, you know, every Saturday, or it was Soccer Sundays, I think, to come around then. I got a few times up to Gillette to watch games there, so my first live MLS experiences were up there with Kaká being new in the league. I watched the Revs against Orlando, so that's, you know, those kind of names, those are my first experiences, and I just got more and more into it, but watching it, following, and then obviously once I kind of knew, all right, junior, sophomore year was pretty good, junior year was okay, and then you kind of just, yeah, watch more and more and follow more and more players that also come out of college like you want to try and do, and so you just get more into it.
So you're drafted by Atlanta, and when they drafted you, a lot of us thought, oh, that's a great pick because he's a guy who can contribute right now. You need that if you're an expansion team. You can't have draft picks that are exclusively going to be like, okay, we cut you after 3 weeks, or, oh, you're a young player, and maybe 3 years down the line you'll get some playing time. You need some contribution immediately from all sorts of different sources an expansion team. You're spoiled. Not gonna like mince words here. I've not been to the training facility yet, but I've seen the photos. I've been to the games of 70,000 people. This is a new thing in MLS. It's a new wonderful thing, but it's a new thing. Do you feel spoiled? What did you think when you got drafted? Could you see kind of the future in front of you? We're like, oh, yes, multi-million dollar training facility. Oh, yes, 70,000 person crowds.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of followed. You know, you follow along what's happening, especially when you're in that position where you might end up there. So you see what's happening throughout the winter and then what kind of players they get, what, how much money they spend, what the training facilities are like, you know. So my first I didn't even think about it as soon as I got drafted, you know. It was just – yeah, I was just happy to be up on that stage and got my name called. And then after I settled down a little, I was like man, I'm going to be there, you know. Like, that is cool.
Were you nervous for your speech?
A little.
Or just waltz up there, public speaking, no big deal?
A little. It was more of happiness, you know. I didn't want to get too caught up in that. But, yeah, I mean, you said it the best. I think I'm spoiled. I don't feel spoiled just because we get it every day, and then you get to experience it every day, luckily. But from what I hear,
that's the definition of spoiled. When you're spoiled, but you don't feel it.
Yeah, I guess so. But from what I hear from all the guys on the team, you know, that have been around the block in the league and that know other facilities, yeah, I mean, you hear some stories that really just make you like, oh, man, I'm so lucky and so happy to be here, to be honest.
There's not many Bundesliga teams, if any, maybe Bayern, Dortmund, I mean, maybe Leverkusen, you're looking around the league, there's some other big ones that would have the facilities, the crowds, maybe even the expenditures on transfers that Atlanta is starting to have or dreams of having. When you tell people what you have, what your team is like, who your coach is back home, are they surprised? What's their reaction?
I don't necessarily think they're surprised because they, you know, a lot of people have started watching MLS a little more, but from back home, especially now with Schweinsteiger being over here, so they kind of know what's going on in Atlanta, and then they obviously kind of make the connection to me and like, man, your fan base is great, you know, like, how is it like? And that's crazy. You get 70,000 people, and we don't even get that here in Germany. So it's definitely nice to see that these guys, or like guys in Germany, follow along MLS and know what's going on. But I mean, the club is taking things to another level here in Atlanta. It's been so much fun to be a part of it and kind of make history that way. But you've said it. I mean, not a lot of clubs around the world spend that much money on facilities, on stadiums, on like infrastructure in general, on whatever equipment we need, on coaches, on other players. You know, it's really been top notch.
How many meals a day do you eat at the training facility? Bobby Boswell's in here telling me that he's just like hanging out eating omelets. He got caught eating cheeseburgers. I mean, you're there for breakfast and lunch at least, right? You can order whatever you want. That's word on the street. Just walk up to the chefs and they're hooking it up.
That's right. We have two full-time chefs there. They make breakfast, whatever you like. Lunch, yeah, usually there's buffet, but you can also order whatever you want. And then I sometimes, you know,
little take-home box.
Take a little take-home dinner. So it's,
hey,
you keep it in the fridge for a few hours, and it's still great.
There you go. Night. We're going to break in right here, but there's more to come from Julian Gressel. Join us on the other side.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You don't already know how to go. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling.
What impresses you from the playing side? You're in training with Almirón, and Justin Martinez is incredible, and of course Hector Villalba is wildly underrated. I love him. When that switch comes around and he opens his hips up and drags it along, and the right back overlaps him, and you're like, he's putting it on Martinez's foot or he's cutting inside. There's going to be a golazo. Your team is salty. It's got to be a lot of fun to play with these guys.
Yeah, it is. And to be honest, it's been such an incredible experience for me as a first-year pro to come in and play with players like that, you know, and play under a coach that kind of puts it all together. And Tata has done a tremendous job this year. I mean, tactically, he's one of the best coaches out there, I think. Now, that's coming from me, a guy that hasn't really experienced that many coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure all the older guys can say that as well. But he kind of has a clear idea of how we want to play, but then also finds a great way of just letting all those guys like be free and be creative and be there who they want to be, you know? And that is really, just a tribute to everybody in the club, you know? It comes from the front office that kind of set that mindset of exciting, fast, dynamic soccer out there, and then getting the players and the coaches to kind of fulfill that. And yeah, like I said, it's been a tremendous experience for me to play with these guys and learn from these guys and play under Tata and learn from him.
¿Hablas español o no?
Un poquito.
How's it going with that? I mean, there's got to be a lot of Spanish flying around.
Yeah, there is, and you hear it a lot. But I don't speak a lot. I know some words for on the field, and here and there you kind of get the gist of what Tata is saying sometimes when he speaks a little longer because it's all still in Spanish. But it's getting better. It's getting there. I know all the other guys are struggling as well sometimes, so I'm not the only one.
What does he expect from you? Like, if you had to sum up your role within this team this year, what was your kind of identity as a player for Atlanta United in 17?
I think I was, you know, he kind of knew that I was a smart player on the field, you know, a guy that can adapt quickly. That's probably why he played me in so many different positions this year, because I have played in different positions all over throughout my career, and I think he knows that, you know, I can adapt and I can change my game to whatever situation is needed. And I don't want to say I was a constant starter. If everybody was fit, I probably would have come off the bench. And I was totally fine with that role, you know. I know that Tata thinks pretty highly of me as a player, and that's obviously great to know from coming from a coach like that. He's told me just to be myself and be who I am and do the things well that he knows I can do well. That's why he's having me out there on the field. And yeah, it's just a great feeling to be playing for a coach like that and to have him thinking that highly of me.
Fans have taken a shine to you as well. Our own Jason Seguini, homer that he is walking around yesterday in a WrestleMania t-shirt. Where did WrestleMania come from? When did you first see that? Has that been like a long-term thing for you, or did that just kind of pop up out of nowhere in Atlanta?
To be honest, it just kind of popped up out of nowhere. There was just all of a sudden this hashtag WrestleMania, and those fans, like they did with everything this year down in Atlanta, they took it to another level, you know, where they made it a thing. I like it. I have a couple of shirts at home myself.
I was going to ask if Jason has a shirt. You got to have some shirts, right?
Yeah,
send those home. People at home need those.
My family has shirts at home. I actually get a few just sent to me randomly, different designs here and there from fans, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it's a cool thing. And I mean, when do you ever get a nickname from a fan base? You know, it's a pretty cool
that's
honor.
Special. That's yeah. special. What is your favorite moment this year? 5 goals, 9 assists. You were productive. You had some great moments on the field. Is there anything that stands out to you, whether it's individual or team? Actually, I'll force you to break those up. What's your individual moment where you were just like, oh, man, this is great for me? And what was the one as a team that you really latched onto?
I think they kind of both go together for me, because I think it's the first game. Just because it's the first game, not just for me as a pro, one of the, like, you know, walking out in front of that crowd and in front of, yeah, and Bobby Dodd was insane. I still get chills when I walk out there now, but I think that game will always be there, you know, my first professional game and on top of that, it was the first professional game for the club, you know, first time Atlanta United walked on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to be a part of that was just a great honor. And I think that was definitely my favorite moment of the year, pretty closely followed by me playing against my idol Schweinsteiger in Chicago. That was probably more for me personally one of a great
definitely
moments.
Your idol, this is the guy like back in the day on your bedroom walls.
Yeah, 2006, the World Cup, that's when he in Germany, that's when he became my idol and my favorite player in the world. Yeah.
What did you What did you have? What kind of swag did you have? Did you get his jersey? You had to have gotten his jersey, right? He can't say no to that.
No, I did. I did get his jersey after he gave me one and Kevin Kratz the other German one. So that's a tough one for Vasti.
He knows coming into that one, he's got to have two jerseys ready. Let the kit man know. We got two Germans on the other team. They're going to want this jersey.
That's right.
Did you get the game-worn one?
Yeah, I got the game-worn one. He actually wore one at the first half, one in the second half.
Smart man. Know. He's a smart man. He knows how to please the people.
Exactly. I don't know if he actually knew that we had two Germans in Atlanta. I don't know if he did that research, but the game was pretty slow at the end because we were down, I think, 2-3-0. And it wasn't going to go anywhere. And I actually got switched to – I started out on the right side, and I got switched to center midfielder for the last 10 minutes of the game. And I actually was playing right against him, so there were a lot of goal kicks and stuff, and we were standing right next to each other a lot. So I kind of talked to him in German a little. And
that'll give it away.
It was it was pretty sweet. And then after, we took a couple pictures and talked a little more about just his life in general and how he likes it so far. And, yeah, he's just a great guy, and obviously – yeah, he made a little kid's dream come true right there.
There you go. You said you told me earlier that Eurosport's got games for free in Germany. It's over the air. So if you have a TV, you just plug it in and you can get it. Do you start hearing from people? They're like, hey, I was like, couldn't sleep on a Saturday night and came home from the bars and whoa, there you were.
Yeah, sometimes. I got that a few times. But obviously my family always knows when they're on and stuff. So they always let the people know around yeah, just friends. Friends know, and then I sometimes give a little shout to those guys as well when the game's on and stuff, and where you can watch it. Obviously, they always hope for an afternoon game here, which is at night.
Good timing. Yeah.
So they always have little watch parties at home, which is definitely cool to just have that support.
I hear that you have had a lot of media attention as well. People want to hear the Julian Gressel story.
Yeah, that Rookie of the Year award definitely has propelled kind of my media attention a lot. I've kind of been in pretty big news outlets over there and been on the phone a lot these last few weeks and months. But it's been, it's great to know, you know. I mean, MLS.
What do they ask you? Like, we're asking you all these questions from kind of the American MLS perspective, from the German perspective. What do they want to know?
They kind of want to know the same things, you know, how I got there. And because it's for them, this is such an unconventional way of making it into the pro level, because not a lot of Germans come over here to the U.S. and go to college for 4 years and then turn pro with 22, 23. You know, so it's really, really a not so traditional route that kind of sparks the interest of those kind of outlets, I think. So they obviously want to know all about that, and then also how it is against Schweinsteiger, and obviously that whole MLS kind of aspect of it as well.
Could you be a trailblazer here? I mean, there's a lot of guys that grow up wanting to play professional soccer in Germany, and inevitably, in the professional game, a lot of guys don't make it. Do you think that stories like this, your situation, the allure of the American lifestyle, could we see more Julian Gressels in the future?
I think so. I mean, I get messages all the time from guys that, hey, following you along, you know, you've done so great, and what do I need to do to kind of make that, you know, and to kind of go along with that? But I don't think it's necessarily just in Germany. You have so much talent over there in Europe. That nobody can make it. You know, you really only the top guys will make it. And then obviously, I came over here because of school as well. It's not just that I wanted to come here and turn pro here. And
sure,
then
it's two opportunities. Exactly. You can chase both dreams, so to speak.
Yeah, so guys from over there definitely, I think, see me as a little role model sometimes, which is kind of cool. I'm happy to help anybody, like I said, that wants to make that step and wants to come over. I'm happy to help anybody with that and kind of help them out and answer questions and all that.
Have you heard anything from like Bundesliga clubs, two Bundesliga clubs, anything from back home? Is that a dream of yours to go back and play there?
It's definitely a dream. You know, I'm a guy that has grown up watching the Bundesliga every Saturday afternoon. You know,
who's
you watch
team?
All those games. Bayern Munich has always been my team. I know it's boring.
Yeah, I was hoping for something a little bit hipster, but you know, that is what it is.
Yeah, no, but it would definitely be a dream of mine to play on a Saturday afternoon at 3:30. You know, in the Bundesliga. But I always say that I have such a great honor to play as a pro, and if I played here in MLS for 10, 12 years, I would be totally content with that, and I'd be really, really happy to actually have played that long professional soccer in a great league. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't happen, then it's not the end of the world for me. If it does, amazing and great, but I'm really happy where I am right now and how it's gone so far. But it's only been 1 year. There's a lot more to come, I hope. And, yeah, I'm excited for the future.
Got a secure head on your shoulders here, man. Before I let you go, I want to hear some Joseph Martinez stories, some Almiron stories. I was in, what was it, the Orlando game? And I'm sitting right by where you guys are warming up the subs. And Joseph Peterson, not Joseph Peterson, Jacob Peterson is running by me. And Joseph Martinez scores a goal. And Peterson runs back by and says, "Yeah, he's filthy, huh?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah." I mean, I know the answer. So I thought that was hilarious. But, like, has to be. It's just so incredible to be around a guy like this that just turns it on like this. He's so productive. He's so dangerous. Center backs just don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, I mean, look at his goal scoring rate this year. You know, if he didn't get hurt, he might have gotten the golden boot.
Might have hit 30.
Yeah, so it's. I mean, that speaks for itself. To be honest with you, he's. He's a hard worker. You know, that always wants to get better and always wants to win. But he's a guy that, you know, when he scores a hat trick and the team doesn't win, then he's mad at the end of the day. You know, because we tied 3-3 or something like that. It's incredible. He wants to win championships. He's not just all about himself. You know, he's a team guy that wants to win every single game, every time he steps foot on that pitch. And same with all the other guys, to be honest with you. You know, Miguel Almiron, he's a guy that just loves to play soccer. He's just like, you know, one of those guys that just loves to have the ball at his feet and loves to, like, ping it around and play and have fun out there, you know? And I can go on and on about these guys.
Yamil Assad looks like he can, like, squat a small car. I just thought that he looks, you know, soccer players in general – big thighs, big legs. But when I watch him play and his strength and his balance and the way he bumps people off of him, I'm like, this dude is a monster.
Yeah, and he has an incredible engine. You know, he's nonstop on the field as well. You know, the way we pressed, and it is demanding and it's hard. And this guy could play 90 minutes and literally not, like, be out of breath once, kind of.
Are you going to go home for Christmas, hit the holiday markets?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to fly home next week, and we'll enjoy the times over there. Obviously, I'm very excited to see a lot of people that I haven't seen in a really long time, just spend some quality time with my family and obviously get the whole Christmas and New Year's joy of it as well.
How much LA Nanita gear is getting carted back to Germany? How many extra carry-on bags? Are you shipping a box back? I mean, you've got a gift for everyone, right?
There already has a lot of Atlanta. Like, they already I've already shipped a lot of Atlanta United gear.
Gotcha.
So I don't know if I have to send some more.
Get a little more creative with your holiday gifts.
Exactly. So I think they're just more excited to see me than the gear. You know, just the gear. So I'm pumped for it.
I wasn't implying that they weren't excited to see you.
No, no worries. I'm just pumped to go home and. I'm sure if I bring a jersey here and there, they'll be even more excited.
Happy holidays from Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Happy holidays to you, Julian. Let people know how they can follow you on Twitter.
Just at Julian Gressel. Simple.
Got to get Gresselmania, man.
Yeah, one day. The hashtag Gresselmania.
Yeah,
the
hashtag will work. The hashtag will work. Hit him up. Let us know what you think. Have a great week, Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah, wherever we are right now as we put out this special. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes.
Hanging out here in the green room with the All-State Goalkeeper of the Year, Tim Melia. Happy holidays, folks. Our specials roll on. Tim, thank you for joining us. Back in your stomping grounds, East Coast, New York, man.
It's good to be home. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I've got some decent weather here. It's not freezing.
No, it's not. This is good, although I've noticed the East Coast, they think it's cold when it's not that cold. Kansas City has more wind. It's a little bit more frigid. There's more, I feel like, ice storms. I mean, it's not like you're not lucking out by going to the Midwest, man. It's not like some Shangri-La of weather in Kansas.
I think it snowed maybe twice in the 3 years that I've been there.
Things have changed, apparently.
Yeah. I miss the New York Christmas time, you know, being in the city, seeing Rockefeller Center tree, putting the snow on the ground. Yeah, I just don't have that in Kansas City.
So we'll get to your campaign, All-State Goalkeeper of the Year, an amazing year for you and well-deserved, best 11, huge individual honors. I want to start with Long Island Rough Riders fame. Take me back to the beginnings of your professional career, because this is kind of a crowning achievement moment, but it hasn't always been easy, and those of the people who have followed your career know that.
No, I mean, I started in Rochester, New York. It was called USL1 at the time. You know, I went in as a third backup maybe, and, you know, going into my first professional preseason, it was something you have no idea what to expect. You don't know what practice is going to be like, what the lifestyle is going to be like. Had the opportunity to work with an older goalkeeper was something I think that helped me. And from Rochester, moved on to the MLS with Jeff Gasar. It brought me to Real Salt Lake. Made the transfer from Real Salt Lake to Chivas USA. And then from there, I was released and under contract, so I was considered a pool goalkeeper, and then rounded out into Sporting.
So you took your pre-professional career path is not one that screams, this guy is going to be goalkeeper of the year in the first division. I mean, and that's not a knock against you. It's incredible what you've accomplished. But you're coming out of college, you thinking, I'm going to be a pro goalkeeper? Or are you thinking, this is a long shot?
This is so far-fetched. No, I wasn't thinking that. Professional soccer wasn't something – it wasn't like when I was growing up, I was like, I want to be a pro. So I started in Oneonta, which is a small school in upstate New York. And then when I transferred to Lynn, which was a small Division II school in Boca Raton, Florida, it started to be talked about from the coach. Now, I don't know if that was – he was just saying something to me. He's like, you know, maybe you'll have the potential to do this. And that's like kind of when he kind of planted the seed in my head and the idea started to grow, and it was something I became very passionate about. And then fortunately enough, he put me in front of the right people and I was able to latch on to a USL team.
How do you make a progression from, like I said, Long Island Rough Riders to Sporting Kansas City, best defense in MLS, All-State Goalkeeper of the Year? We always talk about goalkeepers kind of maturing it takes a little bit longer. You have to get all these reps. You need all these different things. You can play till you're 45 if you're Brad Friedel. How did you progress as a goalkeeper? What did your kind of chart look like as you plateaued and improved?
All over the place. I was just kind of an athlete, you know. I was pretty brave, and I was an athlete, and those were
how good of an athlete? Give us some. Do you have like? Are we talking like 4.3 40 athlete?
No.
Like 45 inch vert? What?
I think I was just more agile when I say it with athletic ability. It was by no means an easy path the way I went. I needed to be broken down. I needed a ton of technical work. Something that I contribute a lot of my success to is Jeff Gasar when I did go to Real Salt Lake.
That's former KC keeper himself.
Yep. He spent a ton of time really, really breaking me down, like riding me every day, making sure I was doing everything right. And when you're in that, it's really difficult to like step back from it and go, wow, this guy's doing all this because he sees potential in me. It's difficult to see that at the time. You know, you're just in the day-to-day actions. You're getting grinded down. You feel like you're never doing anything
right.
Not
playing, probably.
Yeah, it was the third string. You know, third string in the MLS. It's a very difficult position to be in because you're there for practice. You're there as a number. You're not getting a ton of reps. So it's difficult to kind of progress, especially when you're not getting those minutes. But from there, I just think that I found a good opportunity at Sporting. You know, I found my niche. I found a very good team, a team that supports me and supports my style of play.
What is it that in film sessions or during training Jeff was ripping at? What was he pointing out to you? What were shortcomings of your game?
I hopped a lot. That was a big thing for me. So, I mean, all goalkeepers hop when they're getting ready for a set, for a shot, whatever it is, cross. It was something that I relied so much on. And it's something that is very difficult at a professional level. You can't time that hop all the time. You're going to time it maybe half the time, 100% correct, to make sure that you're getting to the ball and doing whatever you have to do. And then just technique, you know, hand positioning, being calmer, things like that.
What makes a good goalkeeper, in your opinion, as you look at others around the league, what are kind of the hallmarks and what's your style? Like, I know you have different goalkeepers. Nick Raimondo's the kind of typical small athletic guy that we've heard about in MLS for a long time. And they have the Bill Hamid's, who's huge and long and takes up space and makes all the spectacular saves. And you have positional guys. And Jimmy Nielsen jumps to mind when I think of those sorts of folks. What makes a good goalkeeper? What kind of goalkeeper are you?
For me, the best goalkeeper is the guy who makes the saves you should 95% of the time. You know, consistency is everything amongst a team. Especially when you're playing on a team like us, you know, we don't give up many opportunities, and you may only have one or two opportunities throughout the game to make that save. And if you don't, you know, it's multiple points you're giving up. So for me, the main thing that I've tried to do is just be the best consistent goalkeeper that I can be for Sporting.
When you think about this particular club, and you were looking for a fit, people that watch your career know that you were with Chivas and you were a pool goalkeeper, and there were some up and downs. How did you get to Kansas City? Like, what were the dominoes that fell to get you in this place? And did you realize early on, oh, I may have a really good opportunity here? This may have been the place that I needed to end up all along. And by God, it's on the right trajectory too. I'm the player I am right now, and I made it here.
So to give you the backstory, I was under contract with Chivas USA, and then when you're released and under contract, you're kind of in this floating around, awkward stage.
The nether regions. Yep.
Yeah, you don't really know where you're going, so I was put into the pool goalkeeper situation, and it wasn't something that I could wrap my mind at the time. It was, you know, I was a little older, I was in that transition where you're going, you know, maybe I missed my window, maybe I didn't, do I give it one more shot? So I was able to kind of go around the league almost on trials, and that was kind of how I looked at it. I was like, okay, I'm gonna need to do this in January. The fact that I'm getting to do this in July, maybe I could just, you know, try to turn it into the most positive way I could. And I was fortunate to get to Sporting, and Sporting's club, you know, it speaks for themselves. They're a very well-organized organization, top to bottom, ownership, coaches, stadium, environment, fans, all those things. It's a club you want to belong to. And when I was there for the pool goalkeeper stuff, I must have did enough to at least draw attention and, like, open up the conversations of potentially coming back. In January, the whole process happened pretty quick and a lot quicker than I thought it would. I thought it would be a kind of let us go through this draft, and if we can't get our targets, you know, you're our backup plan, which I probably was looking back on it. And I thought it was a very good opportunity at Sporting for one reason, and this isn't a knock against goalkeepers in this league, but you've seen it happen a lot of times where teams will go and get foreign goalkeepers that aren't maybe acclimated to the style of MLS. And it wasn't a goalkeeper that was established. So I looked at it where I was being brought in as a backup against a goalkeeper that, you know, didn't have his stripes in the MLS. He was a good goalkeeper, but, you know, he didn't.
I think I'm blanking on his name right now. Chilean guy, I'm pretty sure.
Luis Marin, yeah.
Yep.
He was a good goalkeeper. He was a goalkeeper whose feet were, you know, different level. I would put him up there with Armando. He had this little side volley that was really impressive. But for whatever reason, he just didn't fit the style of our team, and it opened up the window for me to get an opportunity to play.
Was there ever a moment in the pool goalkeeper scenario as you're going through, you have a wife and a daughter now, and we talk about that all the time as you're here because I'm going through the throes with my son, where you thought, man, for my family, for myself, maybe I can't do this anymore. You look at like a Luis Robles, who was also on the brink of giving up the game and won a Goalkeeper of the Year award last year, and he's a guy who was saying, you know, I might do real estate. I don't know. This might not be the career for me. Did you ever have that moment where you were almost tipping over the edge?
Absolutely, and it was right when I got released. It was just that tipping point where you're not really sure which direction in life you're trying to go because you want to establish yourself in anything you're doing. And, you know, if you go into a situation trying to make soccer work and it doesn't, and you kind of wasted another two years in developing whatever your next career is going to be. So absolutely, I think you're a little naive if you're not thinking like that. Not to say that you shouldn't, you know, chase your dreams and all that and always concentrate on a backup plan, essentially, and it's not something I wanted to do. So I just kind of went with the mindset. I was like, this is it. And so I said to my wife, I was like, this is kind of our last go. This is the last time I'm going to make you move. If this doesn't work out, let's move on to the next phase of our life. And I went crazy training. I did everything I could. I had a longer extended off season, obviously. Fortunately, the Galaxy allowed me to train. They made it all the way to the MLS Cup. So I had a longer extended time of training with real teams and things like that. And I just prepared myself the best I could to go into preseason and compete for a starting spot.
Who'd you learn the most from in this whole period, apart from Jeff Cassar? You talked about an older goalkeeper that kind of helped you along. And we always think about these three goalkeepers. When you watch training, you guys are hitting balls back and forth, and you're off away from everybody else. And it's this little, like,
coven.
Yeah, it's a little weird zone that the goalkeepers live in. Tell me about the dynamics of that zone and who are the guys that really kind of pulled you along and taught things. Did you steal things from guys' games along the way?
Yeah, of course. You kind of take little pieces from everyone's game that you're watching, and that's something you continue to do even now. If you're watching a game on TV or in person, you know, you see something a goalkeeper does that you like and you try to implement that into your game. the goalkeeper world is definitely an interesting one. We're kind of our own separate entity from the team. We're not real soccer players. We think we are, but we're not. The goalkeeper dynamic is a little different, you know, because we work so closely together and there's only one. It's really important to have a what I call a competitive friendship, because you do work so closely, and if it's really difficult if you're not getting along with another goalkeeper and you have that competition added in. For me, a goalkeeper that I learned a lot from was Nick Raimondo. Nick Raimondo is just so consistent, and his technique is so clean, and he's always set, and he's always in the right spot, it seems like. And it was someone that when I was there, I admired that, and someone I tried to, you know, get my level up to him.
Did you get any texts or calls or anything after you got this award? I mean, I'm thinking about the Jeff Cassars and the Nick Raimondos of the world, and maybe the Dan Kennedys, the guys that you were around for so long, and, you know, now you're on top.
Yeah, I have a lot of people coming out of the woodwork. I had some
little bit of success,
yeah,
huh?
Like some people I haven't heard from in a long time. Uh-oh. People that I didn't even know that I knew, but yeah, I've heard from them, and it really is an honor. And I was only able to do it because of the contributions of my team, though, and I fully believe in that.
That's got to be a special moment for you. You sit back and try to put that in perspective. Like, what does it mean to you? Where is this trophy going to occupy? Like, is it going to be out and about in your house? You don't hide this one away, right?
No, it's kind of like a culmination of everything, you know, the whole body of work. And it's difficult because you got to think of the amount of goalies that, you know, maybe don't get the opportunity to play. And I'm sure everyone works the same, mm-hmm. You know, like, it's really difficult to say that you outworked someone or you're doing something better. Everyone's trying to get to the same point. And I did kind of reflect a little bit, not initially, but, you know, a week or two after it. And I was like, oh, this is something I should be very proud of. But it by no means is the peak of the mountain for me, or I'm hoping it's not. You know, my goal isn't to win individual accolades. They're nice. They're important. They give you that, you know, gratification of all the work you've done in the past, but I want to win a trophy, and I want to win an MLS Cup, and that's something I think we're capable of doing. We just got to kind of get all the pieces together.
Sporting KC's defense, the best numbers-wise in the regular season this year. Playoffs, another exit in the knockout round. There's too many in a row right now. KC fans hit us up all the time, and they're like, man, this cannot continue. This is killing us. My brother, by the way, being one of those fans. You look at this team, and you talked about what you want to do next. And we've been sitting around here and kind of discussing the intricacies of MLS, and it always comes back to salary cap stuff and budgets and how do you improve and how do you get players. You mentioned that post-career, you might be looking at something front office. I mean, when you look at the moves around the league, do you do it with a little bit of a different lens? Are you almost practicing in your head for what you hope might be the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I want to be involved in professional sports. It's, you know, it's a passion of mine, and I can't see myself not just being in this world. You know, it's all I know. It's all I've done. I would love to transition into a front office position in the GM world. It's something I think I'd be good at. It's not something you can particularly prepare for outside of education, mm-hmm. While you're playing, but I do pay attention to all that stuff. It interests me. I enjoy reading those articles and seeing how teams manipulate money and things like that.
When you look at Kansas City, what do you guys need? Transfer window, what do you want? If you're a player here, maybe it's your want list, because Peter's the one that's got to go find out a way to get it done.
I know there's been a ton of talk about us not having a huge goal scorer, and I know that there's been talk about adding another midfielder. I believe in the group we have. Obviously, bring all those DPs. The more talent we have, the better it is for everybody. But I don't think we are – it's not 100% a need.
Yeah.
The group we have is very good. I think Diego Rubio is a very good striker. I don't think he's getting as much credit as he deserves. A lot of people are forgetting the fact that he just come off a major injury. You know, it takes a full season after you're healthy to kind of get your feet back to where they should be, get your fitness up, get your comfort level up, get your mind working again. So I think next year is going to be a real breakout year for him. And then if they want to go and spend whatever money and bring in all these DPs.
Yeah, you're not going to say no?
I'm not going to say no.
Not going to say no? Yeah, talent influx, nothing wrong with that. Peter Vermees, the head coach. He came in the office this year, and I was like, Peter, what are you doing, man? You're like, you're yoked, first of all, but it looks like you could run a marathon. We know he's a competitive guy. I've watched him in training. I've always joked with him that I'm going to go get his hair cut with him, like go to his barber and have the flat top done. Compare him to other coaches you've been around. His intensity, the kind of aura he sends through his team, the messaging that he has? What is he like? Take us inside the locker room.
Peter, I think the word you use is intensity is kind of hits it right on the head. He is a guy that if he walks into training, say we're out doing whatever, and maybe he's not initially at the training session, the second he walks around, you can just see everybody kind of perk up. The level comes up. He kind of has that aura that people respond to in a positive way and become very competitive. He's an impressive guy. He's someone that analyzes everything. He looks at games. I can't even imagine how many times he probably rewatches games, but his knowledge of the game and his knowledge and his direction of what he wants us to do, it really impresses me. There's never a time where I've gone in a game and not known exactly what I was supposed to do from minute one to the end of the game. Mm. And that doesn't make any difference for any position. He is literally in everyone's ear, not like joysticking people.
Right, right.
But everyone knows exactly what the game plan is.
But there's a reminder for you.
Yep.
If you forget, he knows, and you know, and you're like, I knew. You hear a lot of talk with him about U.S. national team. We asked him about it earlier this year when he was on the podcast. He gave the answer you'd expect him to give, which is, I'm enjoying my time in Kansas City. I love it here. It's a great project. I don't want to leave. Our owners are great. But I am open to opportunity. Who would not listen to something like that? When you hear U.S. national team and Peter Vermees put in the same conversation, I know we're in a weird spot with U.S. M&T right now. Is he a good candidate in your mind?
Absolutely. I think he's got to be the only candidate, to be honest. He's someone who understands the different levels of U.S. soccer. He's someone who's put together, you know, academy systems, USL team now, and then a first team. And he's done it by from a managerial position in the sense of, like, he's been the GM, but he's also done it from the coaching side. He's had his hands and his fingerprints all over everything. And I think that's kind of the direction that the U.S. national team maybe needs right now.
Did you how'd you experience that loss? I struggled to come to words still thinking about the feeling I had that night and the feeling that I had around the draw and the feeling inevitably we will all have next summer in Russia when the U.S. is not involved. As a professional in the game in this country, as someone I think a lot of people are now starting to look at and say, hey, why not give Tim Melia a shot here? Why not? New generation of goalkeepers. He's the best one in MLS soccer. How'd you feel?
It was difficult to watch. You almost kind of saw it happening leading up to the game. I know it had to be kind of a perfect storm of results, but the way everything else was going, it seemed like it was starting to shift that direction into that negative territory. I felt for the guys, man. You just see the expression on everyone's face. You know, I think the players have done a really good job taking ownership, but they also need to just say, hey, it didn't happen. We're going to move forward. They're going to play their games at the clubs, and this next phase of the national team is just going to be a very interesting one. I think the Federation has actually done a very good job not having like a knee-jerk reaction to it and just like wiping everything away. I think the smartest thing they've done is kind of let it simmer for a little bit. They've stepped back just my impression of what they're doing. They've kind of stepped back from it, you know, not immediately went out and hired a coach, a new technical director. You know, they have time. There's no rush right now.
Oh, yeah, we have time.
Yeah.
Definitely have time.
They have time. So whatever they do next, whenever that phase comes, they got to make sure they get it 100% right top to bottom.
I look at that Portugal game and so many young faces, and we're going to continue to see more and more young faces. You're a guy who sees these young players up close every single week in MLS, and of course many are over in Europe doing their thing, the Weston McKinney's, Christian Pulisic's of the world, Christian Carter-Vickers, Matt Miazga, on and on and on. But within MLS, young players you've seen over the course of the last couple of years, who has impressed you the most? Who are the guys that you look at when you see him play, when you watch games at home, when you talk to other players, you're like, man, huge future right here?
Adams impressed me a lot. He was a guy that you see him on the team sheet and you talk about him, but until you actually play against him, I don't think you realize how much he contributes. He does a really good job balancing the team defensively, but then he's also very comfortable on the ball and doing those little interchanging passing and creating stuff.
Anybody else? I mean, I think like a Western Conference guy that might stand out to you?
Rodon. He's a guy that is an incredible competitor. I think that's the thing that sticks out to me. Every time we play against him, he is just buzzing around everywhere. He's fearless. You know, for such a to be at that age and to have that confidence to try to lead a group like that, it's impressive.
I put him in my best 11 this year. Am I was I I got a lot of eye rolls from people for that one. They're like, oh, are you a Seattle homer? I'm like, no, I just thought that the value that he brought to his team as a box-to-box midfielder, I couldn't come up with one that I thought brought more. So I had him and Michael as my holding and then my box-to-box and my best 11.
I don't think anyone should have rolled their eyes. I mean, you got to think he filled a hole of Alonso not being there. Alonso's been like the D mid in this league for how many years now? And he was able to fill it, and people are now going, oh, wow, this kid's got, you know, this is a national team prospect or a guy that's going to play a huge role in the national team.
Who's your favorite player to watch in MLS right now? If you're like, you know what, I got to pay my money to go to this game, I get to watch one guy, he's at the top of his game, he's healthy, he's doing his thing, who is that guy?
I actually enjoy watching Valeri. He's one of those players, and I always kind of gravitate towards these players where, you know, they're not going to, not to disrespect him by anything, he's not going to impress you, he's not going to blow you away with any speed or anything crazy he does, but he always just seems to be like thinking quicker than everyone, and the game almost moves slower for him. And he's able to like see things quicker, and he finds himself a little space, he can kind of like cut around people just because he's kind of expecting what's going to happen next.
He's a guy who maybe should have thought a little quicker when he came against you in a PK, right? You got a save on him. We kind of blew him up because he's hanging out here with us right now. We're hanging out in the MLS Digital Studios. But I think back to three out of four penalty saves this year. And then I think about Jimmy Nielsen back in the day and penalty kick shootouts with like pieces of paper and playing mind games. You don't strike me as that guy.
No, it's funny because one of the old goalie coaches, during our first penalty shootout, he's like, listen, this is how we used to do it. And Jimmy used to make.
Is it Pasquarella?
Yeah.
Legend.
He is a legend.
Legend.
He used to make a whole like theatrical event about it. And I was like, come on, man, this isn't me. I'm not walking out there with a piece of paper and throwing it at people. But Jimmy was a very good, just like creator of energy, and he got in players' heads, and he had a ton of success doing it.
Yeah, he's absolutely incredible. Before I get out of here, that goalkeeper weirdness you were talking about, try to distill it for us a little bit. Try to explain it to those of us who are not goalkeepers. Why are goalkeepers the way they are? What is your who's your favorite goalkeeper personality that you've been around?
Goalkeepers are just a different breed. Like I said, we're not real soccer players. We think we can play on the field and, you know, be that number 10 pulling the strings, but we'd run for 5 minutes and then need a water break. A goalkeeper that I always enjoyed working with and has got a great personality was Dan Kennedy. You know, he was someone that really understood the competitive friendship that I spoke about. He's still a good friend to this day, and you know, learned a lot from him and always enjoyed playing with him.
He's not one of the weird ones, though. I want a weird one. I want a guy who, like, is comfortable with his weirdness, and you would be comfortable saying, yeah, he was a little strange.
Pat McLean.
Whoa, you're going to have to jog my memory there.
Well, he was a guy I played with in Chivas. He's a good goalkeeper. He used to play was with Minnesota. He's just a weird dude. I love him. He's great. He's just a different type of dude.
What's the weirdness?
I don't know what it is. It's just.
Do you have a quirk, or is it just like Tim Melia, all American guy?
You tell me.
I don't know, man. I'm not out there training with you. I feel like that's when the weird stuff happens in the locker room, during training. The banter happens. How do people get at you in training?
Not during training, but yeah. I'm definitely that guy during goalkeeper that's trying to keep everything light. You know, I'm always the one to quickly throw a joke out, keep everyone in like a light, like happy mood.
Mm-hmm. 2017 All-State Goalkeeper of the Year. Tim Melia, we're rolling through in the holidays. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Happy holidays, everybody. Tim Melia from, well, he's a Long Island Rough Riders guy. So is Giovanni Savarese, by the way, to Chivas USA Pool.
Is Chris Armas, yeah. I think.
I was really, what I found refreshing in that interview with Tim, and he's a great guy, by the way, and I think he's so much more comfortable in like the radio situation than he is on camera. But he's got an amazing personality. He's accomplished so much, but he was really brutally honest about like when he was ready. And he's like, yeah, you know, I was at RSL learning from Nick Raimondo. God knows I was not ready. I was not good enough. And that sort of like self-awareness is something that you don't always see with professional athletes.
Well, and let's go back. If you listen to the show a week to Dwayne De Rosario, who turned down a contract at AC Milan because he wasn't ready to be at that professional level he felt like and have it be his life. So it's tough for guys because being a job that requires your body to be at peak shape, you don't have that many years.
Yeah.
So you're in that limbo of you want to push as hard as you can to get as many years as you can, but you don't want to step out and not be ready. It's tough.
It is tough. You have a lot of decisions to be made. And Julian Gressel, I mean, the way he talked about, you know, hey, I'm coming to the U.S. to get a degree. and we'll see what happens. And he gets to Providence, and he said he's up front with the coaches there. He wanted to play at the next level. He just didn't know if it would happen. And by the time he got there and started performing, he's like, oh, this is going to happen for me. And what a first year to have for him, playing in front of 70,000 people at times, 45,000 people oftentimes. You know, he did say, look, I do dream about playing in the Bundesliga. And it might happen for him. He's just got to continue on this upward trajectory. It's going to be hard. Atlanta United is not going to sit on their laurels. They're going to reinforce, and they're sending PJs out for Darlington Nagby. That's going to probably limit his playing time a little bit. Darren Eales told us a couple weeks ago that he'd like to keep Carlos Carmona. They already re-signed Jeff Lorenowitz. You figure, you know, we're recording this before the break here, so we don't know if Ezekiel Barco is done, but if he gets signed at left wing, earning minutes on that team is going to be a grind.
It is, and I think he's in a position where Tata Martino knows what he's capable of. Knows he can fill him in at any position and get a performance out of him, whether it's on the wing, whether it's at that number 10 spot, whether it's deeper in midfield. And my hot take is we see him for a bunch of minutes at right back next year for this Atlanta United team. He can play out wide. He is strong physically. He gets stays focused so he can help defensively, because right now Tata Martino just doesn't sign right backs. He only likes to sign right center backs who can also play out
at
right back.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. We'll see what happens with him next year. Same thing with Tim and Sporting Kansas City. That's it for us until the new year. I think we had 115 episodes this year, Div.
Wow.
I went back and looked. So 115 times if you subscribe, or if this is part of your daily routine, you made us something that you listened to, and I could not be more thankful for that. So we have such a good time on this show hanging out with each other, but I think the highlights of my year have often been when we're out in, other than my son being born, just want to throw that out there, when we're out, you know, in different parts of the U.S. and Canada and doing our thing and going to soccer games and covering events, and somebody comes up to us, whether it be in the, you know, in the line at the airport or wherever else, and says, hey, I really like the show. Thank you so much for doing it. Like that makes my day.
The highlight for me was, I love when we walk by a supporter section and they yell, Weeby, you suck. And then you turn around and they have the biggest smile on their face. And then when I...
Which, I, by the way, I find amusing, but like...
Well, because it's like so endearing.
Yeah.
Because people are always smiling when they do it. And then when I am away from your giant shadow, like in the playoffs, right. I got a couple of those, including at MLS Cup in like the 83rd minute in the TFC supporter section. They were up and down singing, and I walk by, I hear a goss, you suck, and I turn around, the guy has the biggest smile on his face.
Nice.
Good times.
Yeah. So have I told the story on the show about post-birth?
You've told me the story?
Right.
I don't know if you've told it on the show.
Okay, so this is my favorite extra time moment of the year.
If you've already told it, you're going to look like an idiot.
I'm going to look like a huge idiot. But look, this is it for us before 2018, so might as well get it all out at this point. So Cameron Russell Weeby comes into this world, you know, his mother is doing great. He's doing great. We're going up to the recovery room. The nurse has been an absolute guardian angel for us. She, you know, we didn't have a doula, which is apparently a very New York City thing. We did not want a stranger in the room with us. We didn't do that. But the nurse is helping, and she's so supportive, and she's holding my girlfriend's hand and making sure she's comfortable. And we couldn't have imagined a more supportive presence in there for what was a very stressful event for us, just because it was our first. And she gets us settled and she says, hey, before I leave, I just wanted to say something to you. My boyfriend's a huge fan of Extra Time Radio. He listens to all the shows. And I was just like, yes, Cameron Russell Weeby gets ushered into the world at the hands of a by proxy Extra Time listener.
How do you think that do you think she's listened, or she went home and said, I'm birthing this child by a family named Weeby?
She couldn't have gone home because literally this like happened in one shift for
her. So that means she doesn't have a boyfriend, and she listens to the show but didn't want to weird you out, so she made something up.
No. She probably just like in passing, he's like making dinner or listening to the show, or I don't know.
There's more to this story.
There might be. I'm not going to lie. I did try to look her up to like send a thank you and to say pass on my best wishes to your boyfriend, and like, you know, if we had some swag to give, we would give. So
So now everyone knows if you can just
birth one of Weeby's child. If you are that boyfriend, hit us up 401-206-0MLS or extramanilasoccer.com. I will send you swag because that changed my life. So anyway, we hope that this is a good part of your day, or your Mondays, your Thursdays, your Tuesdays and Fridays, whatever it might be. New Year's is coming. We'll see you on the other side. 2018. It will be a new year. It will be a great year. Tam Influx, Disco, all of them touring North America. It's going to be a fun time. We'll see you then.